accession number 12274, reel 5.
Captain Fancourt, reel 5.
I've said that the adventure was a pretty stupid one, but I must admit they came up with the honours. They gave us DSOs and DSCs and things, which was an immediate award, which was good for the Brook. I think we deserved it. Well, anyway, when we got to Gibraltar, we went in there. I went home as far as the water in the Keppel, and we got there. I went to see the commanding chief, who was the splendid character and A.B. Cunningham, who I knew slightly. In fact, I'd come home from the Mediterranean after the Western with him and his flag lieutenant and his wife across France, and piano and across France. So I really knew him quite well. He's a rather scary man. I mean, people were rather frightened of old A.B. Cunningham. And I don't know that I was, because as I said, I'd played tennis with him, all kinds of things around. He seemed to like me. So I went to see him. I thought he kicked my arse, rather, because I don't think we did as well as we should have done. So he said to me, "What are you blubbing about now?" And I said, "Well, sir, I don't think we ought to have lost the Brook. I think I ought to have done something else, and I think it's a bad show, and I ought to have lost." "Oh," he said, "if I cried about all the destroyers I've lost in my life, tears were pouring down my face now." Wasn't that a nice thing to say?
Yes.
He was that sort of chap, you know. He just so. I cheered up once. He said, "Oh, well, that's a war. So you did your best, and you can't do more. We make mistakes, but as I say, I ought to be crying now." Anyway, that was very cheerful. And he said, "Well, you better go home. Go get into a ship. There's a convoy sailing this afternoon. Get back home and get some uniform. Tell them to give you another ship as quickly as possible." So I walked back into the dockyard, and lying alongside the detached mole was one of these new Woolworth carriers called the Avenger. She'd been in the torch landing and done very well. She'd flown off her aircraft and so on, made quite a good job of it. And she was going to be in this convoy, going back to UK. And I had a look at her, and I knew the captain quite well. We'd been squadron commanders together. He was a flying chap. So I went aboard to see him and had a drink with him, and I said, "Tony, I've got to go home in your convoy. Will you give me a ride?" And he said, "Yes, of course, I'd love you to see the ship and see how it works." And I said, "Well, I mean, what could be better?" So I said, "Well, I'm just going down to the Sheffield now. She is the ship I came out in, cruiser." And so he said, "Oh, we'll come back for lunch." It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. So I went down the mole, went aboard the Sheffield to see the captain, who'd take me out. I'd been in his ship for a month. He was another friend of mine, and he said, "Oh, hello, Fanny," he said, "what are you doing?" I said, I'm lost my ship. I made a bit of a hash of this Algiers thing, but I'm going home in your convoy." "Oh," he said, "come with me." He said, "come with me. Don't go in that convoy." He said, "I'm going to the Uganda. I'm going to take the Uganda, and we're going to do a box search about 25, 30 west for a couple of days to intercept one of these German trade, what do you call them?
Blockade
runners. Oh, I said, that's interesting. He said, oh, yes, I'm looking forward to this. He said, why don't you come with me? I said, well, I just booked a passage with Tony Coldhurst in the Avenger. Oh, he said, you know all about these flying ships, damn it, you commanded them yourself and all the rest of it. Come with me, much more interesting. So I said, all right, I will. So I went back to the Avenger and I had a drink with Tony. I said, thanks very much for your kind invitation, but I'm not coming with you. I'm going to charge. Chase a blockade runner with in the Sheffield with Nobby Clark. So he said, well, good luck to you, old boy, good luck to you, and hope you catch it, and went away. And they sailed that night, and 2 days later, the Avenger was hit by a torpedo and lost with all hands. Not a single soul survived. So there again, my lucky star. It's rather extraordinary, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a very near miss. As about a near miss as the old bomb was on the Solent, really. But anyway, I went back there and I went back to England and what did I do then?
You went to the Argus.
Yes, I was appointed. Oh yes, I was appointed to the Argus because. Nice old ship. I'd been in China, and she was very comfortable. She's a proper death trap. I mean, she had no damage control, no anything. And she'd just been in the Mediterranean on the torch landing. She'd been on the torch operation. When I got on, I joined her on the Clyde, and we were sent straight back to the Mediterranean with another cargo of aeroplanes for various carriers and things out there and hotspots. So we really did a sort of transport job. And anyway, good training for me. I hadn't commanded in war before, and I went out in a big convoy and had three or four swordfish on board I'd use for convoy protection all the time. And we had got a jib and had a ran ashore there, and disembarked our gear, and then turned round and joined the convoy game back again. So that was my little job in the Mediterranean once again. The Mediterranean always attracted me. Came back again, and then most of the end of 1943, I was used as a training carrier, mostly in the Clyde. And we trained a lot of pilots who were fighter pilots, mostly Hurricanes and the Spitfires and Lord knows what. We did a lot of flying training every day and all day. We did plenty of it, kept the ship at sea all the time. It's very good for us. And in due course I was taken out, and due to a bit of a wangle, I was appointed to the Unicorn, which was a ship that had been designed as an aircraft carrier and had then been semi-converted into a maintenance carrier for maintenance work, and then re-employed as an operational carrier, which she was used at Salerno and the Mediterranean landings. And then they're forming up the squadron of ships to proceed to the East Indies to try to support the Navy as such in after the Japanese had raided Ceylon and sunk the ships there and all the rest of it. So Unicorn was really rather a nice ship, but not exactly a promotion job, because the captain who had her before didn't want to be used in that way. He wanted his ship to be operational, and he knew the Admiralty people, and he was taken out and sent to the Indefatigable, which is a fleet carrier just being built. Well, that rather annoyed me, because I was just about right for that. I had the Argus for nearly a year, and I was a fleet man all the time, and this other fellow was an ex-gunnery officer who was not a very nice chap, and nobody liked him, and that's why the Indefat wasn't too good. Anyway, that's ancient history now. I went to the Unicorn, and we went out to the Eastern Fleet. Had a nice trip out there with the Renown and the cruisers and the battleship Warspite and the Barham and Valiant, and we had quite a party. We were based on Trincomalee. The Japanese never came our way again. They raided Ceylon once. They never came into the Indian Ocean again. And we'd have been a pretty easy meet, I think, for the this Japanese fleet if we had. We were mostly old ships and one thing or another. Well, they didn't come. And in the end, Unicorn really swung round the anchor at Trincomalee mostly for most of the time I was there. We did a bit of training, flying training occasionally. I got her out to sea, but not often. And I got fed up with the thing, and I went to the Admiral. I said, look, Fancourt wants to do more than be in a maintenance carrier. Can you please do something for me? And I was relieved, but in point of fact, see, I didn't get what I wanted, and I was ultimately sent home. We took the Unicorn to Durban and refitted there. It was all very pleasant, a lovely time and all the rest, but that's not the war. I wanted to get on with the war, and I eventually came home by air from Durban and got to England at the end of 44, really having achieved damn all in my old Unicorn. It was really, really rather disappointing.
How did you finish the war?
Well, again, an awful lot of muddle went on. When I got back, they said, the fleet arm's going to be reorganized, and we're going to have three different commands, and we want a command there and a command there, and you're going to be one of these. You're going to have the rank of commodore and take charge, la-di-da. And therefore, you were sort of put on the waiting list. Well, this thing took months to happen, and I was hanging around and waiting to do something. I went to courses and attachments here and there, and eventually, when he did organize it and come into place, it was a stupid organization, which I was made chief of staff to. A colleague of mine is only a bit senior to me, and we had really nothing to do, and we hung around up in the Clyde supervising American flat-top carriers who came over and needed training and getting together. It was a dead-water job, and I was thankful to get rid of it, actually, when we finally packed up at the end of 45.
So you said the end of 45?
Yes, the end of 45, we packed up this command, and I eventually was brought into the Admiralty again as Director of Naval Aircraft Production and Development, and assistant to Admiral Slattery, who's an old friend of mine, who'd done very well in the war. And I served 3 years there until the Second Sea Lord sent me and said, we're going to give you a ship so that you can get a recommendation for an admiral. I was a senior captain then. You get a recommendation for an admiral, and off you go. Good luck to you, my boy. And I was appointed to a ship in China, actually, and the admiral said, well, we've just got to write to the CNC China and get his approval for your appointment. It's a matter of course. I mean, we do all the appointments. He's got nothing to do with it. But just politeness to get his approval. So this was sent off, and a month or two later, or a week or two, I suppose, the letter came back saying that Admiral Brind knows Captain Fancourt quite well, and he liked him very much, but he thinks he's rather too senior for the appointment, and he'd like a more junior captain who would bear in his ship, his flag captain, the whole time the man was squadron chief in China. So there was such a weak lot of the Admiralty, they just let him get away with it. They said, all right, well, we'll have to find Fancourt another job. Well, of course, there were no other ships to go to, because you were earmarked months before for these ships. This is the time when the Navy was paying off, and there simply wasn't a vacancy anywhere. As you say, I was towards the top of the list. So at the end of the day, I didn't get another ship. The second Sea Lord wrote to me, and the fifth Sea Lord wrote me and said, we're very sorry, Fancourt, but I'm afraid you won't get another ship. And well, that's more or less right off for me, because you must get a CNC's recommendation for your last year or two in the Navy. And so that I was put on the retired list with somewhat disgruntled terms.
That was 1950.
Yeah.